be sure to check out Effective Fitness Combatives. We offer a range of combatives courses delivered both in person and soon online. EFC covers everything from officer apprehension, vehicle extractions, weapon-based entanglements, and more. 1-day, 2-day instructor courses and custom courses are available. Post credit is currently available in multiple states. Our cadre has over 250 years combined law enforcement experience and are all high-level jiu-jitsu practitioners with also a wrestling and MMA background. Check out EF Combatives on Instagram. That's EF Combatives. For course schedule or email jay@effective.fitness. That's jay@effective.fitness for more info or to schedule class. Welcome to the Be Effective Podcast, episode 47. Mr. Jason Ransom. Jason served 4 years as security forces and infantry squad leader in his time in the Marine Corps. He spent 18 years as an active law enforcement officer at both the state and local level. 12 of those in SWAT, most of his career in various leadership and program development positions. Jason is a talented teacher with a plethora of certifications to his name and is known for his passion and depth of knowledge that he brings to each class. By far, the best hair on social media. A great conversation with a good dude that I could talk to all day. We dive into tactics, shortcomings within law enforcement training, the issues that he also encountered as a cop, and his upcoming courses and what he teaches. Before this episode starts, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do. Without further ado, episode 47, Mr. Jason Ransom. Enjoy. Who are you, man? Let's kind of get you out there. Let's get a little Cliff Notes resume out there.
All right, cool. My name is Jason Ransom, born and raised here in Louisiana, down in the dirty boot, and got out of high school, wasn't ready for college, so opted for ye old Marine Corps, and I went in active duty in 1994, did 4 years, and like most first termers, they call us, you know, we do four and get out, and I caught it right between, you know, right after Desert Storm, and then right before all the Afghanistan problems, and didn't deploy anything like that. Just did 4 years, tried to reenlist. Stuff happened, changed. No, you got to do this. I'm like, well, I'm out. I had a good taste. I had fun, got out unscathed, you know, no disciplinary action. So I rolled out and started dabbling with this and that, different types of stuff, and kind of, I guess, got a calling to serve a little bit more. So I went and started donating my time as a reserve to one of the local departments here close to me, and did that for about a year or so. And a spot came open available to become a full-time police officer. And I did in 2002. Shortly thereafter that, I got a canine assigned to me. And that was game changing for me, you know, just having that dog by my side in my unit, you know, 24/7, he was part of my family and I treated him like such. He was just an amazing, amazing addition to me, my morale, and my overall safety, as far as that's concerned. Because, you know, he's had a light switch just on and off. He could be calm. I bring him in the squad room, you know, typing reports. When we typed reports, you know, because we didn't have computers, so we'd have to go to the office, type reports, enter evidence. He just lay on the floor. People come in and greet him, no big deal. But when it's time to go to work, you just turn him on. And that was a game changer for me. Became a firearms instructor in 2004. And left that agency to go to a bigger agency, went to Louisiana State Police, wrote tickets for a while and, you know, all that kind of good stuff and had a great time. I got assigned to the firearms training unit full time as a firearms instructor. And that's really where I started, you know, cutting my teeth with teaching and instructing people, you know, the ways of, you know, pistol, rifle, shotgun. Did that for about 4 years and decided to leave that agency to pursue something a little bit bigger, better. I say bigger because it gave me moving from the state level to the sheriff's office gave me opportunity to be a part of our SWAT team. And I was assigned to the range full time, and we have a part-time team. Well, our part-time team was a very, very high tempo. You know, we operated between 80 to 120 operations a year as a part-time element. So we were extremely busy in our neck of the woods. And man, that was game-changing, be a part of those, that small unit of guys and running and gunning and doing stuff. You know, the adrenaline was flowing again and, you know, getting called out in the middle of the night to go all do all this kind of crazy snoop and poop stuff. Did that for right at almost 12 years. I made it up to a team leader position on the team and again, maintaining a full firearms instructor status at the range. And we taught three academies a year at the range, and then two basic SWAT schools, not to mention the in-service departmental training that filtered throughout that. So when I say we're extremely busy at the office, I mean, we were slammed, but I loved it, man. I'm very, you know, very high tempo. I talk fast. I move around fast, you know, but I loved it. And Jared actually approached me a while back and was like, look, man, we're looking at starting this training company, and I think you'd be a solid fit for it. And I'm like, you know, got a good thing going on in the sheriff's office here. You know, appreciate the offer. And I think the world of Jared. Jared was one of my teammates. We valued each other's opinion. We would show up early, stay late, train dudes on non-SWAT days. Like, hey, guys, you want to come in? We'll work over whatever y'all want to work on. I'll run you through some pistol rifle drills. We'll do breaching. We'll do physical fitness, you know, just to bring dudes tighter. So we did that. And some days that was on weekends. You know, I'd have the keys to the range. We'd go up there and we would just train, you know, not shoot a whole lot, but just train dudes. And it was awesome. And, you know, he left and went and did his thing. And October of last year, I decided it was time for me to move on. So I had really dabbled with the idea. And, man, I lost sleep. I cried, went to church, banging my head against the wall. Is this the right thing for me to do? Should I leave now? You know, and I spoke to God about it. And he said, yeah, I think it's time for you to leave. And gave me a big clue, a big push out of the door. I said, okay, roger that, sir. And I left, man. That was, I think that was about a Wednesday. And Friday, I turned all my stuff in. Just like that. The Wednesday, I called Jared. I said, hey, this is what I'm thinking. He goes, man, he said, if this is your decision, you have a spot at the table. He goes, you know, I love you, man, like a brother. And that touched me, bro, that you cried again, you know, that he was like, I always knew this was to be. He goes, in my heart, I knew this was going to happen. And that struck a nerve. And I'm like, you know what? It's time to move on. Because a lot of what he's doing and what OTG is doing is monumental. That they're giving so much back to not only law enforcement, but the civilian public, which is incredible. You know, in my position or my positions as law enforcement, I've interviewed thousands of cops on, hey, bro, why you want to do this? Typically, the answer is, you know, to serve my community. And I'm like, in what manner do you intend on doing that? Writing tickets, you know, writing tint violations, seatbelt tickets, red lights, stop signs, that's serving your community. So let's get on a much bigger level. And me, in my mind, serving our community is giving back. And remember, I told you earlier that when I first started out, I was a reserves. I was donating my time, no pay, no nothing, just donated. And now that I've gotten out, other departments have reached out and like, hey, bro, would you mind helping us out with training? Can you give us some pointers, some tips? We have a training officer. Can you help him? Yeah. Hey, we don't have a training officer. Can you give us some pointers? Sure. So that's now giving back to a different type of community. And guess what that is? The law enforcement community as a whole. Us giving something to them that they can use and make them that much better, faster, stronger on the road or in patrol or detectives or whatever. And now give them tools to solve problems that they may not have had the answer for before. And that's amazing to me, man. That just, to do that puts a bigger smile on my face than what I was doing before.
That's almost exactly how I felt. Leaving was probably one of the most difficult decisions I've ever had to make. I mean, I remember the day. It was the day before Christmas Eve, and I was outside bench pressing because I had to move all my gym equipment outside to work out in my driveway. I was the weird neighbor, and I was sitting there like 8:30 at night, freezing my balls off, fucking bench pressing, and just like started crying just because I was like, man, is this what I want to do? And then I ended up calling my captain and lieutenant that night, about 10 o'clock that night. It was like, I think I'm done, guys. And they were both like, good. Like, you need to go do what you want to do. And you know, we think you can do good. And so that's, again, like my mission changed. I've always wanted to give back and do more. And I've done more outside of the badge than I do wearing one. Will I ever go back? Maybe. I don't know. My work's not even close to being done here. I was just talking to the deputy chief of Braintree Police Department. We're going to hook them up with a free year of training. I wouldn't be able to do that if I was still a cop. Like, right. I wouldn't be able to make a difference to, you know, 120 police officers or even more than that. And again, it's not about like, look at me. It's just like, well, it's, what do you want to do? Like, you want to now give back to the law enforcement and civilian community that want to be prepared and want to be better. And I think what you guys are doing over there at Orion, I mean, obviously we are partnered together, you know, like Effective Fitness and OTG are partnered together for a reason, right? It's we're super mission driven. That's super incredible, man. That's a pretty crazy background because again, most people don't leave at 18 years. They usually just, they'll tough it out.
Why stick it out if you're not happy? Why stick it out if you're not happy? Why be miserable, uncomfortable in your position, walking on eggshells, or just angry? You know, remember coming home and just angry at the world for what? For what? For something that happened at the job and now I'm mad? I'm not that I would kick my dog at home or, you know, throw kids against the wall, but why am I coming home angry? And I never, and that's what I tell cats, the few that have reached out, which is surprisingly few, the few that have reached out, man, how you doing? I said, I'm great. I have this much stress, zero. I've never felt such a burden lifted off my shoulders, off my chest. I feel so much more free to not have to worry about pissing off this person or making this person angry. I'm just doing what I want to do, and that's train people to be better.
That's amazing. I mean, you have enough. This thing is, you have a skill set, and you think that skill set is valuable to where you can help better individuals, and you felt as if, and really, man, your mental health, your mental persons. I tell everybody this. This is a job. It is a job. It is not your identity, and that's very difficult with this profession. This is one of the few professions where when you have a badge and a gun, you feel, I'm looking at my badge sitting on my bookshelf right over there, and I think about what that badge meant to me when it was on a belt, right? And it meant a lot. It was like, you know, you have a sense of pride, a sense of integrity, of huge sense of responsibility, the biggest sense of responsibility for a job. I look at it and I'm like, but that's not me. Like, who am I now? I am a guy who has a phenomenal team of active guys that are out here making a difference in the community. And that's what makes me happy. Jason, let me ask you this. When you left, did anybody on your team kind of lash out or were they pretty supportive of your decision?
No, most of them on the guys on the team, the actual team were like, hey, man, good luck. You know, hope everything works out for you. We dapped and hugged. I said, hey, bro, stay safe. If there's anything I could ever do for any of you guys, you know, by all means, you know who I am and you know what I'm about. I'm going to help people. And they're all real supportive of me, you know, moving on and kind of, you know, doing my own thing, you know. And I left a big gap, and I'm not tooting my horn, but I left a pretty substantial gap when I left the team. And obviously you're a number, they're going to fill that gap immediately, but everybody was pretty, you know, hey man, you know, good luck, be safe, do good things. So roger that. I am.
They still talk to you?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I told you. The few that I've reached out to or the few that I've talked to has been minimal. And I know that we're all alpha males, right? Or some of them claim to be. And we want the other guy to reach out to us. You know, hey man, if you need something, you should call me. Oh, well, vice versa. But we're only doing that when we need things, right? Typically, that's when people call, when they need something. Hey, bro, I need you to help me move. Hey, bro, I need you to help me do this. Instead of just checking.
Do you have a truck?
Yeah. Oh, you've been working out? Awesome. Bring that over here. Instead of, hey, bro, how's your mental health today? Did you lift today? Are you going through anything, you know, you want to talk about? Just checking up on a brother, bro. You know what I'm saying? Not to see if they need anything as far as help around the house or need me to come cut your grass for you, but hey, bro, do you need anything? Are you cool? Are you good? You want to go have a beer? You want to go get some dinner? Just talk, catch up, decompress. That's being there for teammates.
That's extremely true, because there are, I could probably count on probably one hand how many people from my entire agency consistently talk to me. One hand out of 350-something, which is fine. No harm, no foul. And most of those are my supervisors, believe it or not, which is great. You know, but the guys I do talk to are super squared away guys. They would have been friends outside of the job, you know. I mean, my best friends are still on the job. They didn't work with me. Well, not directly in the sense that they didn't work with my agency, but they, you know, but I did get to work with them, you know, and I'm around those guys all the time. And they're absolutely solid dudes. You know, both of them are canine sergeants here locally. So it just kind of puts it into perspective as, you know, whenever we talk about, oh, you know, this is who I identify as, but when really, just like you said, you were replaced almost, I was replaced before I even officially left. They were like, yeah, so-and-so's taking your job. Eric's taking your job. I'm like, shit. Okay. Well, I still got like 6 more weeks of work left, but that's cool. You know, as long as I get paid, I really don't give a fuck at this point. But you know, that's the thing too, is the guys that are currently doing the job, you know, it definitely takes a special breed to be a cop. I can't imagine being a cop nowadays. You know, and I've only been out for 2+ years now, but I can't even imagine being a cop right now in this time. I got Joey and Kyle and Jeff and that gear dude and all these other guys that work for Effective Fitness and are just absolute unit cops. And man, they're just great guys, but they take a different approach, right? They are concerned about mental health. They are concerned about fitness and training and nutrition and recovery and family time and all these very important factors that are very neglected in the profession. Being on a SWAT team, did you see kind of an issue with, you know, those things or those elements kind of decreasing? Are you paying attention to yourself or your family or even your kids and stuff like that? Did that kind of push you to think about possibly leaving the profession?
Yeah, man. Cause it, you know, to, like you said earlier, why would anybody want to do this now? And the more we would get sent on calls of dangerous natures, not just, you know, any of them had the potential to go bad real quick. You know, being shot at several times, you know, being really close to critical incidences and things that could be potentially life-changing really puts it in perspective. You know, I'm 45 when I left and was still extremely active on the team, you know, making entry, leading by example, you know, running drills for everybody, you know, demoing my own stuff, you know, running our obstacle course in some of the fastest times that guys half my age weren't doing. And I'm like, at what point have I had enough? At what point do I continue to still put me and my joy for chasing the adrenaline and going out there and getting the bad guy and doing all those things? Am I putting my family's comfort way below mine? Because I was doing the things I wanted to do. What about them wanting their dad to come home? You know, and me being so close to these incidences, you know, I had a teammate killed in the line of duty that was a mentor of mine. We've been on some really scary, sketchy stuff where cops have got shot, and we literally track this dude through the woods as SWAT dudes for hours. Ultimately, it resolved itself, if you know what I mean. But me leaving in the middle of the night and not knowing for sure if I was going to make it back, man, that stuff starts to take a toll on you mentally. And you worry about those things. And man, every time I got on the outside of our TRV, I'd always say a prayer, you know, hey man, you know, protect me with your shield and arm me with your sword. Allow me to go in here and do good things and make good decisions. And for the most part, he was there with me on almost all of them, you know, and I was able to do those things. It's a really fine line that those guys, you know, you'd love to do that job. And you're really chasing that next adrenaline dump, that next high, that next bad guy, that next, you know, next breach. You know, man, it's in a moment's notice, all that stuff can change. And that's just a risk we're willing to take, you know, banking that our dynamics and our tactics were good, that everybody on the team was gelling and knew exactly what to do and how to do it. And that was the comforting factor for my family and myself to know, hey, we're going to harm's way. We know what we're going to do, and we're all coming out of this. You know, everything happens for a reason. And I think my background, like you said, a crazy background in history that I've had, I think that all comes into play. And like God puts people in your life at certain times for certain reasons. And I feel like this is the time and this is the reason now that I have went through all that stuff and been the person I am, to now bring it forward, to really push a skill set out to people that matter, you know, and not that the other guys didn't at the time, but it's just different now. It's really different.
The Be Effective podcast is brought to you by Effective Fitness Training. EFT is a performance-driven fitness program designed to improve individual performance. Created by our team of physical therapists, strength conditioning coaches, nutrition specialists, and a team of active and former law enforcement with over 100 years combined experience. EFT is developed for those who want the most comprehensive fitness plan available. Use promo code podcast at checkout for 10% off the life of your membership. We talk about the mindset too. Do you feel as if your mindset changed at kind of in the sense of you wanted to kind of go from more of this doing to coaching type role? Was there a change in your mindset there, or do you still have the same mindset you did 10 years ago?
Yes and no. And I'll say that two part. Yes, because I think it is in me to be a teacher, to be a person that shows mythologies and principles, you know, these TTPs of what to do to get yourself out of harm's way or what to do to better yourself. So, and the other side of that is my mindset has changed because I really got upset dealing with people that didn't want to change. And people that don't want to change, meaning they're there to get their score and go on. And you know what I mean. They're there to get their score and leave. That's all they want. That's all they need because that score gives them the right and the ability to do a couple of things. And without going into a great detail, when I started really, and this, it's not new. It's been going on for a long time. It's just me just dealing with it. But like, oh, that's the norm. But man, what? Why does it have to be the norm? You know, the mindset of the individual should want to strive and improve and better oneself. But when you see that degradation in those people just drop and plummet, you're like, what are you even doing here? You'll be lucky if you make it home if something goes bad.
Because right.
I've right. seen people in my line of work, in my profession, that are unable to get up from a kneeling position. Unable. Physically cannot get themselves up off the ground from a kneeling position. So what good are you going to do if you have to go down and handcuff somebody like you typically would, you know, kneel down next to them, prone them out, put their arm out. How are you going to get back up? Ask the bad guy for assistance, you know?
Good luck. No. It is very difficult to see those people because the fuck is wrong with you? Right? You look at them and you're like, I have sometimes would get in trouble for really speaking my mind. My old agency's K9 team. Yeah. I got in a lot of trouble for talking shit about their dogs because they just sucked at the time. They may still suck now. I don't know. They may be great. Who gives a fuck? I don't know. But at the same time, it's like, hey, Adam, you can't speak on this. And I'm like, well, then don't ask for my fucking opinion. So, because if you ask me, like, I would have some of the canine handlers approach me about something and I would tell them, not that I'm an expert in, you know, canine behavior, but I know enough. I've trained a lot of police dogs. I've trained with a lot of legitimate canine units around the state, even the Southeast for that fact. You know, when they would ask me my opinion, I'd be like, yeah, I don't think that's going to work. You can't track two things at one time. The dog can't differentiate between two scents, blah, 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 all this stuff. Like in the sense of you're tracking, not like narcotics and tracking a person. I'm talking like, you can't determine, like as a handler, is a dog on the scent of an animal or is he on the scent of a person? We don't know which one he's tracking. Like you're going to hope it's the scent of the person because, you know, you hope, hey, this is where the person was. He kind of ran off to and you should know your dog's cues. And I was like, well, you got to make sure the dog is on the scent you want him to track. And they were, anyways, I digress with that conversation there, but it was just a pain in the ass. And I ended up trying to send them off to a master trainer, a Napawada master trainer. And basically, he was like, yeah, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to that, you see these guys on the range and they're, all right, guys, you're going to two standing, two kneeling, two prone, whatever the stupid qualification is, that shouldn't even be a qualification. And you see him go prone and then you're like, all right, guys, recover. They go to recover and it's a 5-second recovery. It's like, I'm just asking you to stand the fuck up.
Like that's all.
It shouldn't be that hard. That's it. I'm asking you to stand up. So you're telling me if your child was choking or was, you know, on the other side of the house and you had to get to your child within 10 seconds, you're telling me your child would die because of your lack of ability to move. Let's just say, fuck another officer, your brother and sister, and you know, with the badge on. Think about your child, your wife, your significant other is dying and you need to get to them and you can't. That's just enough motivation there to be able to physically move. I mean, you're 45 years old, right? 45 right now?
Yep. 45. Yep.
You're a stud, dude. Like, I was watching your, you posted a video about flow drills, like flowing into a room, footwork drills, basically.
Yeah.
I know 45-year-olds that don't move like that. Better cops.
But you were moving that,
like it was, yeah. Like, but again, but how you were super articulate. You described the why behind, you know, the interior leg, you know, the anterior leg, how you're going to kind of base, and that's going to put you and your gun in the room at the same time so you can hit that corner, right? Mm-hmm. And the way you described it was great, but not only that, but the way you demoed it, really just, even if you were doing it wrong, let's just say you were, or you were doing it, that's something that's not optimal, I would believe you because of the way you did it. Just because you were so confident, you were so direct in your movements. And it was just like, that's huge. That's huge. And I think people really do undervalue, especially in this profession, the importance of physical capabilities. And I'm sure you've seen it too, man. Freaking, you're in the South, man. People in Louisiana like to eat, don't they?
Yes, sir. Everything with gravy.
Yeah, same here, man. The South, man. That's what it is.
Yeah, just you know, for a person to be able to move their own body weight, you know, and that was kind of one of the eye-opening factors that really drove me to another level of intensity was there was guys that I would make entry with that couldn't move another downed person if they had to. And I would put my foot so far in them, like I'm the one that's down there and you can't move me. And I'm not the biggest guy on the team. At the time, when I was doing that stuff, you know, lots of stress and terrible diet, I was at about 175, just normal walking around weight. Then you add kit, and then you add, you know, all the helmet, rifle, the whole, now I'm, you know, almost 200 pounds and you can't move me. How is that going to sit well with you knowing now that my family, you could have done something to get me off the X, but you can't move me. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not that biggest guy. So now I'm practicing what I've been preaching to people. And now I'm right at about 190, no stress, better diet, gym, you know, 4 or 5 times a week at 45 years old. And I think, like you said, I should do the research and see how many 45-year-olds are in this type of shape. Not that I'm in perfect shape or the most or the best or whatever, but damn, I think I'm doing pretty freaking good. I haven't had any surgeries, no knee replacements, no hip replacements.
Man, Doug, you're doing good, man. I'll tell you right now, you're doing real good. Real good.
Bro, like you say, just be effective, man. Do something, right?
Dude, just be effective. Like, it's either you can or you can't. You're not going to just be good all of a sudden. Like, you're not just going to know how to fight. You're not just going to know how to fucking shoot. You're not just going to know how to pick a downed person up and move them. That shit takes skill and takes time and takes skill. People think, oh, he's really strong. Strength is a skill, right? Just like shooting is, just like combatives is, just like, you know, tac med is a skill. You have to practice these things. These things take time. You don't have to practice every single second of every waking hour, but you have to, again, I just got done training jiu-jitsu. Then I had some calls, then I sent some emails, and now we're doing this podcast, you know, and then I'm going to train again tonight. I'm going to hit my workout after this, and then I have to do some more emails, and I'm going to train some combatives again tonight. It's just one of those things where you got to figure out where you're lacking and what you want to be good in. And I think the self-assessment part is extremely critical. You kind of being a coach, teacher, instructor, when you look at a student or you look at someone who comes to you for advice, whether you're a kind of a mentor, do you kind of show them how to look through their issues or even look through their strengths to find a possible weakness to work on it? And how do you go about that without really damaging confidence?
Yeah. Like breaking their spirit, like you mentioned, you know, dog Correct. Training. So let me go back a little bit. You mentioned my flow and my ability to footwork and stuff like that. So in the Marine Corps, I started to dabble. I was assigned to a recapture tactics team. We called it RTT for short, and that was in 1995.
Dang, you old too, but carry on.
Yeah, but right after that, went to Marine Corps Close Quarters Combat School, CQB, and learned a whole new skill set that added on to RTT. So I've been in some way, shape, or form around CQB since that time frame. All right, so now here we are, and I'm able to put all my past experiences and years of training and look at these guys like you just asked the question, how do I not break their spirit and show them what right looks like. So I demo it at slow speed. This is what I want you to do. I show them. And then I'm just watching everything. I'll start at the base of their feet, watch their footwork approach the door, then watch them go through the door. Hey, bro, look, hey, you stutter stepped two times right there, or your foot was out of whack, or you missed the step, so I want you to do that again. All right, roger that. So they do it again. I've literally taken my rifle off, and I've got behind a guy, and I've said, you feel my foot right behind your right foot, right? I said, when I tap it, you take a step. And I'm going to tap your left foot, then you take another step. And I said, then we're going to kind of pivot 45 degrees to the left. We're going to swing that right foot through that door, and you're going to start to pivot to the right so you can see that deep corner. And dude was like, do you really have to do like that? I'm like, well, if you could do it right, I wouldn't have to do it like this. So up until the point that you get it right, this is how we're going to make room entry. And it's little like we were dancing. I was just behind him, like that old middle school shuffle like this, right. Hands on your hips. And that's how I got him to walk through the door, because dude just was walking, you know, wouldn't bend his arms and wouldn't bend his knees. I'm like, are you a fucking robot? Dude, relax. Just walk. Just walk. All I want you is walk. And then to add to that, I throw a lot of humor while I'm teaching. A lot of humor. And some of it's like kind of slick. Some of it is it's a blatant jab, but it's funny. And it breaks people down to where, okay, this guy's not a dick. He's really here for me, and he wants me to get better. So, and I always tell people, instructors starting out, look, man, if you can make the class laugh, you've just gained their attention, their respect, and they are at so much more of a less anxiety that now they can really focus on what you're trying to give them. If you're just going there and just bark orders and read the PowerPoint, blah, 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 they're going to glaze over and not retain anything. But if you can remember where you were sitting in that chair and how jacked up the instructor sounded, don't be that guy. I would walk around the class, tap people, touch people, you know, knock hats off the table, make sure they're paying attention, poke fun at individuals, not nothing to insult, but just to break them down to where they're not so high strung. And that's what I'm doing with students when we walk into the door. Even though it's a stressful situation, this is how I want you to do it, bro. And that's what I tell them. Hey, look, think about me and you middle school dancing. I said, I'm much handsier than you, so I'll probably be the high school pick, but you know, you can still get there. So here we go. Once you get them to laugh and kind of come down a notch, then they really start to gather information and put the stuff into perspective and carry out that plan of, okay, this is what it looks like. Yeah, man, you got it. Now just take it slow. And eventually we're doing runs at full speed. I've used to train SWAT schools twice a year at the office. And, we'd have between 20 to 24 dudes in that school. And some of them have never shot and moved at the same time. And it was just awkward. You know, their legs are gapped apart, or they walk sideways and step, drag. I'm like, just walk to me. Walk to me. And I'll have them just walk to me. Like, what are you doing? I said, just come on, walk to me. I said, see, are you walking? Yeah. I said, okay, now stick your hands up. Now walk again. See how that works? Okay, now pick your rifle up. Now walk again. They're like, oh, and it just light bulbs. That's it, bro. That's all I want you to do. Just walk.
Yeah. So do you think a lot of that, I mean, obviously, you know, stress, they're going into a new position. They obviously don't want to disappoint. They want to kind of impress and show that they are, you know, capable of these tasks. You also feel like a lot of the, and you've definitely seen this, you know, kind of being in the profession for so long, is the impact of technology on someone's learning ability. So what I mean by that is you got so much information out there regarding CQB, right? There's all different types of CQB in the sense of, like, you know, different environments, right? Different variables that can be thrown into CQB, low light, vehicles, whatever the case may be. Do you feel as if some of that information can get very complex and very confusing when it comes to certain objectives? Like, let's just say it's just simple, like flowing into a room, right? Do you feel as if some people think it's more complicated than it is, and that could lead to anxiety?
Oh, man, no doubt. One of the biggest taboo topics, you know, for CQB, and man, that just that topic alone, you know, you got to do it this way, or no, you can't do it that way. And, you know, for the longest time, my team was one of the last dinosaurs to do dynamic entry across the country. And we fought the battle to not do dynamic. And eventually it, you know, just inevitably it happened where, hey, bro, we just cannot do this anymore. And we were successful, man. Our tactics, our, you know, speed, surprise, and aggressive action, the way we do things, I think it put us not above people, but we were pretty good. Anyway, there's so much information, like you said, that's out there that some of it is of good value. Some of it is really watered down. And some people just have this mindset of, no, this is the way I was taught. And this is the only way I know how. Like, we get into this big discussion of, and I show them, and probably have some people, you know, start to call the big one, going to the unknown first. Why is that such a big deal? Well, you know, it gets, you know, get your gun in there and you present your gun to the unknown threat. And I'm like, yeah, you do. You do. You absolutely do. And Adam, I break it down and I put it on a timer so they can better understand it. Because we could argue and bicker about what tactic works best. But until you put it on paper, test it FOF, and get baseline times, all you're doing is just arguing. So now we have data. And I show them that. And I make one guy keep time, and everybody else is watching. And I say, okay, look, this guy's going to go this way to the unknown, and I'm going to flow in behind him and go to the left and blah, blah, blah. And I want you to count how long it takes my gun to traverse the room and then come over here to the area that he's looking at. And they get a baseline time. Okay, let's do it again. And again, so we get three reps, all timed. And then we go back, and I say, okay, now check this out. Now I'm going to push this way, and this guy's going to come in. I'm going to get out of his way so he can now see the area that I'm looking at as I come through the door. So now we're running the rabbit, essentially, is what it's called. I'm sure you're familiar. So anyway, so now we run that three times, and then we look at the time. And I said, now, based on your level of experience, having seen this ran two different ways, same scenario, six reps, what do you think is better? And they look at the time, and they go, well, this way is faster. It gets two guns in the room faster than the other way. And it cuts down on time. It's usually between 2 to 2.5 seconds time difference. And I said, so that's what separates OTG apart from everybody else's. Hey, bro, you can do whatever you want to do, but I'm going to show you methods and principles of why this is better over this. But it's up to you to figure out what you want to do. So just that topic alone causes so much strife between dudes that are just starting CQB or guys that have done it for a very long time. They go, no, you have to do it this way. No, bro, we just want to do it safely and effectively. Which way is it? Well, if we look at it as data, this way says we get two guns in the fight faster in a shorter amount of time. So if you like that idea, then pick option this. Well, okay, so now I'm trying to decrease that level of anxiety by showing them ways that works faster to defeat the problem much sooner. And it just feels really comfortable when you got your battle buddy in there clearing those sectors of fire together, and now you're online and you're decimating everything inside the room. And they go, okay, you know, old guy knows a little bit of something, right? When they start looking at all the content that's online, and they try to pull a little bit of this, a little bit of this, and a little bit of this, and push it together, it makes no sense to them because they're looking at three different mythologies and going, why can't I do this right? What's going on? Well, you're looking at three options and none of them are really cutting edge. You're kind of outdated tactics, or just because he was, you know, Israeli doesn't make him any good. What about this guy? You know, well, he was SF and you know, the Green Beret. Awesome. So you need to pick one and work hard at it. You don't go in the gym and do a bench, do a shoulder, do a deadlift, do some abs and roll out. No, you concentrate on building one muscle group or two muscle groups at a time, making those stronger, and then you evolve to something else. So just dabbling at all three of these events is not making you any better. It's confusing you and making you even more dumber than you are when you walk through the door.
That's so true. That's so true, because a lot of people, there's been a lot of debate on the VCQB stuff. I'm not going to get into who or what, but you know, a lot of these people who would say, oh, well, so-and-so does it this way and this way is not right. Okay. Have you talked to that person? Have you taken a class with that person? Maybe you guys are saying the same thing. You're just saying it in different ways. Maybe you don't understand his class. Maybe you don't understand the purpose of his class. Again, you have optimal and you have less optimal ways, right? We always want to go towards the optimal side because that's going to give us the likelihood of a much better outcome. Right. So, you know, I think what you guys do at Orion is very unique in the sense, if you guys do break it down, I love the side-by-side videos, especially the footwork stuff. I think the footwork stuff is extremely important and very underutilized, just in the sense of, well, that's just for everything, right? That not just CQB, but even just whenever you're talking to somebody. You don't stand squared up to somebody. Like, you want to have somewhat of like a kind of a bladed stance, more of an athletic, you know, kind of stance in case you do have to take action. And if you don't believe that's true, then you've never been in a fight. you know, I do like how you said just a plethora of information out there, and people are taking these 30-second clips from, let's say it's from OTG, and then, you know, they're taking another 30-second clip from SEAL, Delta Force, you know, Green Beret guy. And they're like, well, hey, this is, it's, you guys are saying two different things, but you guys are getting the same result. Well, it's, there is no the way. It's, you know, it's just a way, you know, I think, but you guys have that kind of backing. But, you know, to kind of go back even before you got into law enforcement, you know, like kind of in the Marine Corps, did you guys have a lot of force on force training and stuff like that in the Marine Corps before you got into law enforcement, or is it just like, hey, you go to this class, you get certified? How did that work in the Marine Corps?
No. Well, back then paintball was real big, you know, wasn't a whole lot of Sims.
That's right, paintball.
Yeah. What, yeah. You know, that was before Sims was invented.
Hey, slingshots.
Right. Yeah. Carry on. You know what? Hold up. I'm wrong. We had, In CQB school, we had 9mm Berettas that had been converted to shoot Sims, but it was a real primitive version. It wasn't what you know now.
Right.
It was something else. Jesus. And then our MP5s that we used had the same thing. You take the barrel out, slide the new one in, and it used the same magazine. But it was they were both 9mm, so it was all the same ammo. But it was something. It wasn't called Sims. It was whatever the shit it was back in the Gap. But first introduced with paintball. And recapture tactics, and then they took it a step further with the Sims and CQB school in the live fire shoot houses, because it had big square rubber blocks that we could move and make walls. So right. it was reinforced with Sims, and then we hit that bad boy live fire. So, you know, the skill set was really proven to, if you jack it up in Sims, you're going to leave your buddy hanging, or he's going to be exposed in live fire. Now, of course, we're not shooting at one another by all means, but you get the idea that if a buddy gets tagged in Sims, that means you've dropped the ball in live fire. Now he's exposed, or you've exposed yourself, whatever the case would be. So they was a play on one, just like it is now. You know, if you expose yourself a little bit too far to a door, you're getting shot in the rear end. They're like, what happened? Well, you stuck your butt out. So I took advantage of it. So yeah, it started then to reinforce the concept principles of protecting your buddy, watching your angles of exposure, you know, making sure that you're scanning the entire room before you make the next decision.
So were guys too, you know, so then you kind of made that transition into law enforcement. So the guys that you learned from, did you guys ever bring in other teams to help you, whether it was, you know, prior military guys or stuff like that? Because I do believe that there is some value in the strictly military community when it comes to those, you know, those type of movements. I'm not saying that, you know, they're 100% right in everything they do because they have a title. But I do think that there is kind of value there. Was there some crossover training there whenever you were on the teams? Did you guys ever bring in, you know, like other companies or trainers?
Yeah, they actually, you know, from a lot of the tactics that we got when we're doing dynamic, like I said, we're extremely busy. You know, we looked at Las Vegas SWAT because Las Vegas was running dynamic at the time. And then Dallas SWAT was running dynamic. So we actually sent guys to Las Vegas, and then they brought guys from Dallas in to kind of evaluate the tactics of where we were based on what they were doing, because extremely high tempo team, and you know, they're full time and all this other stuff. So they would come in, look at what we're doing, be like, oh man, that's like exactly what we're doing. And that's exactly what Las Vegas is doing. Okay, so our shit is together. We know what we're doing. It's just small town podunk, you know, Louisiana down here. And
right.
But our tactics were freaking spot on, you know. And we brought those guys in as an evaluating tool to go, our stuff is working. And that's what I tell guys going forward with OTG. Listen, if you're not running opposed, if you're not getting your stuff evaluated by some other person outside, then you're like, you're playing hide and go seek with yourself, because you're never going to get found. Once you bring in somebody else that kind of has an idea of tactics, they can sit back and observe and go, yeah, the idea looks good on paper, but when y'all do this in this manner, your number two guy's exposed a lot more than he would be if you looked at it from this manner. And they go, well, let me get in there and I'll show you what I'm talking about. So I'm just laying in the cut like this, you know? Oh, okay. So now we're not as good as what we thought we were. We need to reevaluate what we're doing. when we get that consultation, you know, and that's part of what OTG does. Not to say I know everything, but like the commercial says, I know a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two. So I want to bring that to people and make them better.
And that's what you guys really kind of hone in on. And I do really like your post. And I kind of told Jared, he does articulate very well in his copy on the post. Sometimes I'm like, Jared, you make a post and then people will comment something that either is opposing, which he's totally open to opposition, right? But it's also like they didn't read the entire copy because it's so fucking long. And I'm like, bro, it's also Instagram. So people who again, I get it too. They'll just comment and they'll be like, hey, well, it was addressed in the copy. Did you read the entire thing before typing? No. Okay. Well then maybe you should fucking read. It'll help, you know, but I think what you guys do is great. And I love the success you guys are having. I love that, you know, that agencies are hiring you guys to come out there and really evaluate and kind of show, you know, some fresh eyes, you know, on teams. I was never a SWAT guy. I never had cool hair like you do. I was never as handsome. I'm a solid. I know my place. I consider myself a solid 7.1, 7.2.
I mean, you're strong 7.5, dude. Almost 8. I mean,
oh, okay. Shit. All right, dude.
You're handsome, bro.
She's like, you're looking like a 5 today. I'm like, fuck.
Got to go to the gym. Hold on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's why I work out so much, guys. I'm super glad that you made that decision to kind of make that transition because I think you are a huge benefit to the community. And I am excited to work with you and Jared on some projects kind of moving forward. I think that there is still a gap out there when it comes to what you guys have to offer. And, you know, I feel as if we can make a difference there. And I think that's what's really going to help the community is everybody, you can bitch and complain all the fuck you want, but if you're not making moves to fix a problem, or better something that's already good, you know, I'm just super excited to see the future of Orion. And I know it's come a long way so far. You guys have been doing some great things. But you are Ransom Tactical Solutions, correct? That is your company.
Yes, sir.
And so what all do you teach for Ransom?
I do private instruction with handguns, you know, handgun, rifle, shotgun. People that want to practice and get a little better to get some outside instruction, yeah, I got you. I can't really do the CQB stuff by myself. So that everything, all of that stuff goes through O2G. I'll do consultation. Like a guy reached out to me the other day, say, hey, look, man, you know, churches are a real big topic for security purposes. So a guy reached out to me and said, would you just come by and give us like a consultation? I'm like, absolutely. Just to kind of show them what to look for, you know, closing doorways to keep from coming in, you know, unsuspecting angles, be mindful of this. Hey, when this happens, you know, where are you going? What are y'all doing? You know, who's doing this? So consultation work, stuff like that. Like a guy called me from Colorado and we were on the phone for about an hour and a half and I helped him build a course of fire for their regional SWAT team. Up until now, they've been shooting their normal run-of-the-mill qualification course. I'm like, well, what purpose does it serve for the SWAT guys to shoot the same course of fire as everybody else does? It doesn't separate them. And he's like, well, and I said, how about this? And I just spitballs and he goes, bro, I like that. I'm like, everything that is in this course of fire is applicable to what you would do as a SWAT guy. Jump off the truck, sprint. Well, we're going to shoot two, then we're going to fucking sprint. Oh, run? I'm like, yeah, we're going to run, dog. So he was like, oh man, this is great. I'm like, yeah. So that, and whatever else I can do, you know, to help people, man, I'm just all about putting my name out there, putting out good stuff, putting out good content, you know, showing people what right looks like, man.
And so where can people find you on Instagram?
Instagram is at Ransom Tactical Solutions, LLC. And if you want to email, it's just at gmail.com. So the same thing as Ransom Tactical Solutions, LLC at gmail.
Give Jason a follow, guys. He does post, I think I like your information the most because it's not overwhelming. It's not a 7-minute video. It's a super quick clip. That's a very applicable tip that builds off of what you guys do. And I think that's extremely important, especially in the social media realm where everybody has the attention of a fucking goldfish. But you guys do a great job of acquiring that attention and keeping that attention because I actually do read your post. I read Jared's post because there's so much value in that. so much value, and people are paying thousands of dollars for the value that they can get from y'all's two pages for free. I do highly recommend taking a class with Jason and Jared. I know we're supposed to be linking up here soon in the next couple months. So I'm super excited to make that happen.
Yeah,
we'll make some stuff happen. But do you have any other words for the listener, words of encouragement, motivation, anything like that?
Yeah, man. Those of you that are listening, you know, keep up with the good fight. Be better than you were yesterday. Whatever you got to do. If that's get an extra rep, get an extra mile, get an extra anything. Be better than you were yesterday. Keep pushing hard. Stay safe. Keep up the good fight. And get some freaking education, man. Make yourself better. Don't just be stagnant with departmental regulations and what they've got going on, because that's baseline. Get out there. Even you got to pay for it on your own, man. I used to tell people, save your birthday money, save your stripper money, go buy some bullets and come to the range. I'll help you.
That's right. Amen. Amen for that. Strippers don't even love you. You know what I'm saying? Strippers don't even love you. They don't even, they're fun to look at for 10 seconds and you realize they're doing a job too. You need to be good at your job. They're good at their job. You need to be good at your job first. No, man. Thank you for that. There's some great words, you know, training beyond the standard. But guys, check out Jason, follow his page. Better yet, sign up for a fucking class, get some training with that man. And you do travel, correct? You do travel for training.
Yes, bro. Like you said, people don't read. We literally post it all the time. That's why I went live yesterday and talked about it. We will travel. We need a venue. If you want firearms training, I need a freaking range. If you want CQP training, well, guess what? We need a building, a house, some type of structure that we can go from hallway to room to do some baseline CQP stuff. If you want that, find us a venue. We will come to you. Keep in mind, we have to account for travel, airplane, hotel, gas prices, you name it. That all has to be factored in, but we will come to you if that's what you want. So look us up.
Link in the show notes below if you'd like to follow Jason on Instagram. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. New episodes launch on Monday, every other week.